Before I begin on my theme, just to let you know that the anthem is other than advertised this morning. We're without the kind of deep bass that we needed for the Glinka. So at that point, we're going to have the Sanctus from Schubert's Deutsche Messe instead, which is highly appropriate to Trinity Sunday. For it is indeed Trinity Sunday today, a day of dread to preachers up and down the country, though not to this preacher, and a day that is strikes most people for its sheer irrelevance. What on earth is this good, is this Trinity business to anybody? How can we know? Do we care? Can we be bothered? That would be the general feel around congregations, not just in the Church of England, but everywhere. It was so very different in the fourth Christian century. Imagine that you're in Constantinople in the early autumn of the year 381. A great church council is gathering. And one of the participants, a man called Gregory of Nyssa, says that he describes the atmosphere in the city. You go to change some money, and the man starts talking about begotten and unbegotten. You ask the baker the price of a loaf of bread, and he tells you that the Father is greater and the Son is subordinate. You go to the baths and you remark to the bath attendant that that was a nice bath. And he says, yes, but the Son was created out of nothing. Fourth century Istanbul, Constantinople, was a ferment of theology. And it's not an exaggeration to say that the doctrine of the Trinity was, in the Eastern Mediterranean world, in the fourth century, the equivalent of Brexit. It caused huge problems for the government. It forced the resignation of ministers. It split communities and families right down the middle. How could that possibly have been? How did they get so worked up about the doctrine of the Trinity? This is the great meeting, by the way, that drafted the creed that we still use this very Sunday morning. It's a remarkable fact that that creed has remained in unbroken use from the year 381 to our own time with very little change. There's just one significant change now in the way in which we say the creed in the Western churches, but I don't need to go there this morning. Why bother? Well, the issue of the Trinity is more or less imposed upon us, inescapably it's there, because of the Christian Church's experience of God. We experience God as the Father, the ground of all being, the whence of our utter dependence, that from which everything that is has its being. We experience God in Christian Church as the risen Christ. Christians were early convinced that the risen Christ was not simply a human person risen from the dead and gloriously transformed. This was more than a person. This was God's own self. And the Christian Church experienced, as we remembered last week, the great pouring out of the Holy Spirit to energize it and send it out on its mission on the day of Pentecost. So this threefoldness of God is there in the Christian Church's experience of God, and it needed to be thought about. But then the threeness of God is also all over the New Testament, especially St. John's Gospel. Just read through St. John's Gospel, and it's absolutely full of the interplay of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, very intimately connected within the Godhead itself. Jesus says, "He who has seen me has seen the Father. The Father and I are one," and so on. And at the end of St. Matthew's Gospel, you get the Trinitarian formula itself when Jesus sends his disciples out to make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, as indeed we do to this day. So you can't get away from thinking about the Trinity as this truth that is of obligation for the church. It's just there in the experience of God and in the tradition. And the early Christian centuries, especially in the Eastern Mediterranean, spent an enormous and traumatic time trying to think hard about this, to make sense of it. And they came to certain fundamental conclusions that still stand. One is that when we talk about God as Father and Son and Holy Spirit, we're not talking about how God relates to the world. It's not that God is God the Father in as much as God creates the world, and then God, as it were, switches a hat and becomes God the Son in the work of redemption in Jesus, and then becomes God the Holy Spirit in sanctifying the church. Creation, redemption, and sanctification are all things that God does, but it's the whole of God that does all three of them. You can't distribute those roles between the persons of the Trinity. No, the conclusion of these early debates was that the threeness in God is not three different faces that God turns to us. It's about how God is in God's own self. And therefore, there's always been a Father from eternity and always will be. There's a Son from eternity and there always will be, which is why we say in the Creed, whose kingdom shall have no end. And there always was a Holy Spirit and there always will be. Co-eternal and co-equal, none of them subordinate to the others. There may be an order in which you think the Trinity, from the Father through the Son to the Holy Spirit, but the three persons are one in substance. And then the other thing that the early Christian centuries insisted on is that God is only one. He is perfect simplicity, God is perfect unity. And at the same time, there is a genuine, eternal threeness in God's own being of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. How do you put that together? No one's been able to do it.